I have to take you back. I've got to take you back because this story could not happen today. And I thank God it could not happen today. So I'm going to take you back to 1948. And remember, just a few years after World War II. And my mother and father met and had sex and got pregnant. And so they had to get married. So they got married in 1949 and had a child in 1949. And because my grandfather and my uncle were prominent surgeons at Johns Hopkins, my parents had to hide the pregnancy. They were forced to leave town, and they moved to a tiny little town outside of Toledo, Ohio, where they had no friends. He worked. Mom died if she didn't have a million people to talk to, so I don't know how she'd live those 2 years without anybody. But she had my brother in a tiny little hospital near Toledo, and it was not Johns Hopkins, so it was very bad, and my brother was brain damaged during childbirth. And my father still remembers the forceps marks in the head, and I don't think my mother woke up for a couple days because the anesthesiologist was drunk. So there you go. So my brother was born, and I came along supposedly 9 months later. An Irish twin, I was always told. They were then allowed to move back to Baltimore because by then you couldn't really tell how old my brother was. But the trouble was my brother kind of stopped talking. And my grandfather said, well, he's deaf. You've got to do something about this. So they went from one doctor to another to another. And then they found Dr. Kanner. And if anybody knows about autism, you know that Dr. Leo Kanner was kind of the grandfather of autism. He used the word, I think, for the first time. My brother was diagnosed as autistic, which meant he was going to be strange and different, kicked out of kindergarten, couldn't go to any of the schools I was going to. Nobody knew what to do with him. But thank God we were in Baltimore now. And Miss Jean Simmons started a school called Linwood in Ellicott City. It's still going. The mission of Linwood back in 1955 was to save kids from going to Rosewood State Hospital. That was her purpose in life. She took my brother on. He stayed there till he was 12. He loved Miss Simmons, loved going to school. But, as Miss Simmons said, he was a failure of hers. He had to leave. My father didn't remember why. He blanked out everything. He blanked out everything with my brother. So, at this point, my grandfather said, you've got to get rid of your son because he has three sisters. You cannot have that boy acting out around his sisters. I think at this point, if I remember right, he was starting to use the F word. He was noticing the difference between girls and boys, you know, and he was acting out. So he was sent to Rosewood. And Rosewood was a hellhole. It was horrible. It was horrible for my brother, who had lived a fairly nice childhood at that point because he'd been at Linwood. And at this point, he wasn't living a happy childhood. He was surrounded by Rosewood's State Hospital was built for imbeciles and the retarded. And that's the kind, you can kind of guess the kind of people he was surrounded by. He would be allowed to come home on occasion. He was allowed to come home on Christmas, but he was never allowed to take any Christmas presents back with him because everything would be destroyed when he hit Rosewood. My memory of him going back to Rosewood was just a horror show. He would scream and he would yell and he'd hang onto the banister and weep and wail and say, don't take me back there. And when she got to Rosewood, there would be two men waiting to drag him out of the car and take him to his room. My brother was there for several years, and when he hit his 20s. I'm fine. I've got my own Kleenex. Thank you. I'm fine. I'll make it. When he hit his 20s, and he had a speech impediment, so when he'd come home and he'd dare go out of the house, we're not allowed to have friends, we're not allowed to talk about him to anybody, we were not to discuss the fact that we had this brother that we basically threw away, and sometimes he'd walk down to a bus stop or something and try to do something, and he'd come back all beaten up, and kids would have taken his stuff and torn his shirt and taken his bus money, and he just couldn't understand it because Robin was such a sweet soul. He looked to the stars. He thought the stars and the planets were the most magnificent thing. And at Christmas time, sometimes he talked to one of my cousins, and his brother is here today, would talk about the stars and the planets, and he would say this. And my brother was one of the examples of Rain Man. Dr. Kanner was asked to help with case studies, and my brother was one of the case studies that the writer read, because my brother could remember any weather of any day that he could. You could say, how about September 30th, 1961? And he'd say, oh, 60 degrees, and it was sunny all day long. It was a good day. And he could remember all those things. So he was very special if you got to know him, but most people didn't get to know him. But he came to his counselor when he was about 23, I'm figuring. And he said to his counselor, I'm not retarded, and I need to get out of here. You're going to help me, aren't you? And the counselor said, okay, we're going to figure out a plan here. So my brother knew how to read and he knew how to write. He knew how to do change. He knew the bus system. They went and taught him how to do the bus system. He was working in sheltered workshops. Thank you, God, for BARC. I give a shout out for BARC. Wonderful organization. They helped him through all the different things, and he realized the greenhouse was his love. He loved plants. And if you ever go down York Road and you see the BARC truck pulled over and they're doing landscaping, think of my brother and how proud he was. I've got a picture of him coming out of the truck of BARC, just standing there. He was so proud to have a job. He went to the job every day. He learned how to take the bus. And finally, they realized they could put some of these young men into apartments. And my brother was one of the first nine who got put into separate apartments. He had to learn how to cook, take the bus, you had to have a job, you had to be able to do change, you had to pay your own bills, you had to buy your own clothes. I have books of all the things that he bought. He was so proud to have shoes that he owned. He was so proud to have a TV, a little TV that he was able to buy for himself. And he wanted to vote, and he registered to vote. And people came out in protest against the retarded voting. And that was what was shown on TV. We never told him that, because that would have just been horrible. Meanwhile, I had tried to teach him. The most heartbreaking thing is when he would say, why can't I go to school like you? And I said, I can't tell you why, there just aren't special schools. And he says, I just want to go to school. And I said, I know, you can't do it, because there's no programs like that at that point. So there he was, working every day. Meant everything to him to do that. Everything to him. One day the bus must have come early, or he was a couple minutes late. He saw that bus going down. That's all he could see. That was my bus. I have to be on that bus. He ran across the road to the bus and was killed by a car. And it was just horrible. And actually, my cousin here, thank you, God, he's the one who identified the body. He took that burden away from my family. And I thank him for it, because it was so horrible. And it was like that call where my father said, come home now, come home now. I'm a lawyer. And I just knew the voice. And I didn't believe it. I said, he can't have a car accident. He doesn't drive. I mean, I couldn't comprehend what happened for a while. And my father made the decision, no obituary, because he hadn't told the people he worked with, most of them, that he had a son. He said, no, we're not doing this. No. Now, he did have a funeral, and the people who knew about Robin came, and of course, I had another cousin, not the one here, the cousin who said, "Oh, aren't you glad it's all over, it's done?" And I said, "No, I am not." And it was very, very hard for me. The guilt that you feel as a sibling when you're able to do things and your sibling wants to do what you're doing and they can't and they're blocked because of it. It is so painful, the guilt. But what I learned recently, because I didn't know my parents were pregnant when they got married. So we celebrated Robin's birthday 9 months to the day from their wedding date to make it all legit. Okay? But guess what? He must have been born 4 or 5 months earlier. And my brother never got a chance to celebrate his real birthday. He never knew how old he was, even though he'd write to Miss Simmons and he'd say, "I'm 16 and 3/4 years old, and I love you, Miss Simmons, and I want to come back. Please let me come back." And my mother wouldn't mail the letter. She would just keep them, so we found them and everything. So my brother had a secret birth, secret life, secret death. But I'm going to tell you something. I always wanted to have a big brother that could protect me at the playground. A big brother I could say, "Yes, that's my big brother," you know. But you know, Robin gave me much more. He gave me the ability to understand that you can do so much more with your life than you ever dream of if you want to. You can be kind to people and take bullying and take it in and still be kind to people and still love people and get joy out of every day of the life you're living. So what more can anybody ask for from a brother but that? Thank you.